This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. So, hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I am freaking awesome. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. It's good to see you, my friend. So, thank you. So, summer's kind of winding down, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful outside. It's just like that perfect temperature, clear blue sky, nice clouds.
Isn't it? It's crazy beautiful. So, here in New York, where you get those sunsets, you know, you get those pinks and purples and just those vibrant colors that only happen in a September sunset.
Yeah. And soon they'll break out the sweaters. And
Even this morning, I was watering some flowers that are out on the window ledge. And I was like, oh, okay, it's a little chilly out here, actually.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I find it kind of invigorating.
I do too. So, you know, everybody's getting back to the things that we do in life post-summer, school. So you've got a kid in school. Yeah. She's there, right?
Yeah, and I'm in school too.
That's right. You are.
That's right. I'm taking some theology classes. So.
Oh, you were going to be our public theologian, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I can't keep it private.
No, unfortunately. You sure can't. Well, so folks, welcome to another episode of Radical Love Live. So Kelly and I are, you get us on this episode. We don't have any guests.
That's right. Mark, what are we going to talk about today?
Oh my God, Kelly, I'm so glad you asked. We are going to talk about deconstruction and reconstruction. Now, for me, those are, you know, they're words I've heard over the last 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 years. They're not brand new words to the notion of the Christian faith or any faith for that matter, but within the context of what you and I are, I've given some good thought, I think good thought about what is that? And so I thought we should share with our listeners some of our ideas on the notion of deconstruction and reconstruction. And I don't think they're a bad thing, by the way. I think they're a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of let everybody in on that part. So we're not going to go down the doom and gloom side, but, you know, I can speak only from my personal experience. You know, I had to do a lot of deconstruction right after sobriety, you know, because there was a lot of things I had to unpack when I was figuring out, you know, why my life was the way it was, and religion and the trauma that I had as a kid and how that impacted that meant that I had no choice but to, like, touch the third rail. And for the folks, if you know what we're talking about, the third rail is the one on the subway track that you don't want to touch because potentially right. It can kill you.
It'll jolt you.
Yeah, give you a good jolt. But, you know, in my situation, I had no choice but to touch the third rail on my on religion, what it meant to me, what my faith was all about. Why did I have all this anger and just all of that? And why was I an angry atheist? Because that's what I described myself for a lot of years. So I had to go and deconstruct. And then I've, over the last 11 years now, I've done a lot of reconstruction. So, and I look back and think, yeah, you know, I am grateful I did that because it's healed a lot of wounds, but also it's allowed me to get in touch with my faith in my own personal way that, that quite honestly works for me. It's the one that I can live by.
I wonder if this is a good time to look at the definition of deconstruction.
Yes.
Because I know some of the research that you did for this episode talks about deconstructing, because it's one of those words that gets kicked around a lot on you know, social media, and you hear you know, conservative pastors talk about it in, you know, in dangerous terms, like if your kids are deconstructing, layover on the way to atheism.
That's right. And all kinds of horrible things are going to happen. Because to that end, Kelly, I think, you know, a lot of people, when they do hear it, probably think, have negative experiences with that word. Because certainly from the pulpit or institutionally, I don't know if they want to talk about deconstruction so much.
Right. So. You know, and it sounds like it's, you know, it's like the new drug. Your kids are going to get hooked on.
hooked on deconstruction.
So. But this definition is, it says, deconstructing faith is a process or movement in which a person challenges their personal beliefs and traditions. It results in some people leaving the Christian faith. So this is all specifically within Christian terms, although I'm sure it happens in other religions, while others remain in it, meaning remain in the Christian faith, but in a different setting, such as leaving a conservative evangelical church, which opposes homosexuality for an LGBTQ plus affirming one, and still others may return to the faith they originally held. So this is where you start to see, you know, I'm more experienced with it in evangelical, in an evangelical framework, because that's where I come from.
Right.
So my process was something like this, that I was, I had a faith where we thought of ourselves as having a very literal interpretation of the Bible, which, I mean, you can unpack that, say, you know, it's literal in that it's the current cultural interpretation of the Bible filtered through thousands of years of patriarchy and different people's interpretation. I could go on and on about that, but there
we
is
could do
no,
an episode just on
right,
that.
Right. But I would, and I say all that to say there is no true, like, literal interpretation of the Bible that absolutely captures what the original authors were.
You might surprise a few people, because I bet you there are a lot of folks in that are Christian who think that there is one literal interpretation. Uh-huh.
Okay, so I don't see them carrying around baskets of fruit so that everybody knows that they can be judged by the fruit that they bear.
Okay, well, now you're getting picky, but that's okay.
Okay, all right. So how many goats did you give to your daughter's husband? I say
17.
That say, you know, that I went through a process of challenging my faith, and I went at it whole hog. Like, I thought I was going to come out on the other side and find out that it was just, that it was all made up, that it was just kind of yet another religion that followed the old monomythic pattern and borrowed from other cultures. And
so did you think you were going to come out as an atheist?
I don't know about an atheist, but definitely an agnostic, or somebody who is kind of like now free to, you know, now I'm going to figure out what all else, you know, maybe like a scientist, you know, come out just like, I'm only going to believe what, you know, the empirical evidence.
Of course. What you found out in your experiments.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went through a process of studying the history of the Bible, the different languages, different processes that have gone through, different books that could have been in the Bible that weren't, how the process of, canonizing the Bible went. The history of different people's interpretations. And what that did is it all kind of like broke up this rigid structure that I had. So I guess that's where the deconstructing is you're kind of pulling away those parts that aren't as, you know, aren't as sturdy, and getting down to just like the scaffolding, or just like the bare bones structure of faith.
I love that. Can I throw something in here from an article that I discovered while searching the Googles? It is, I'm quoting here from the article, it's, what is deconstruction and reconstruction mean? It could be found on Medium. Sorry, I can't even say that right. And it was written by Ruby Claire back in 2019. It's a 4-minute read, so it's a good one if you want a primer on reconstruction, deconstruction. But so she goes on to say, the act of deconstruction can be traumatic, lonely, and confusing. If you decide to throw out some of the thread, where were you supposed to look for if there is not the Bible? And then she goes on to quote a PhD, I'm assuming this is a therapist, just based on the quote I'm about to read here. In the case of fundamentalist beliefs, people expect that choosing to leave a childhood faith is like giving up Santa Claus. A little sad, but basically a matter of growing up. But religious indoctrination can be hugely damaging, and making the break from an authoritarian kind of religion can definitely be traumatic. It involves a complete upheaval of a person's construction of reality, including the self, other people, life, the future, everything. And the last sentence is, people unfamiliar with it, including therapists, have trouble appreciating the sheer terror it can create and the recovery needed. Mm-hmm. And that's from Marlene Winnell, PhD. So I share that, you know, as you were sharing as well, because was there any time that you felt lonely, confused, and in this process of your own personal deconstruction?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There are really strong cultural and familial ties. You know, when someone comes from a family that is very tied together by its relationship to faith, that, you know, like showing up at Thanksgiving dinner with a very different faith outlook than other people can be, can be kind of disturbing to the relationship. And I'm not to say necessarily that, that my tradition is one that would kick somebody out. It's more that everybody gets worried. They're like, oh my gosh, he's like embracing gay people. He might go to, the down place.
The place that we won't name.
There are wider relationships beyond families, and people leave churches. Like, they might have grown up in a church where it's like their whole family. Like, these are the people who bring the casseroles to, when they're, when somebody dies, or, they come and, bring chicken soup for somebody who's sick, or, somebody who does a really good job of explaining this process is Rachel Held Evans in the book Searching for Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about some of the reasoning that she had that made it clear that she could not, in good conscience, be a member of the church that she was in anymore. But, like, she describes being in the car crying after talking to the pastor, because it's also, there's some people who, for whom it's a relief to leave their religion because of the trauma, because of the fear, because, in many cases we're finding out about all this abuse that has happened. But it can also be traumatic because it's like a death. It's like a breakup.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, folks, Kelly and I, if you've listened to our other podcasts and know a little bit of our history, Kelly and I come at our faith from very different perspectives, right? He is a part of a family that's very tied to their faith, and where mine, my parents, were faithful, but actually never took me to church. I would go with one of my neighborhood friends whose dad happened to be the Methodist minister, the church in our town. So those were my experiences. The point is, though, then there was the trauma that I suffered that you, Kelly, have not. And so when you think about deconstruction, while the end result can feel the same for both of us, how it actually is embodied is going to be a much different, because you didn't have trauma, but yet, as you just said, it could potentially feel like a death, because this is what you knew.
Right. And it's for me, and this is why, by all rights, I should be an agnostic or even atheist based on what I've learned, based on what I've learned about these traditions and, some of what I took as completely biblical theology that once I broke it apart, I'm like, this is something that came up in the 19th century and isn't part of the ancient tradition.
Yeah.
But there was always a faith kind of nagging at me. And I think the loneliness that I felt the most was that there was a point where I said, I'm only going to believe what I can empirically prove, I'm going to kind of withhold my belief. And I felt lonely because I felt separated from God, because I felt like,
wow, there's that. I didn't even think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I
there's
had this that. Whole lifetime where I felt an intimate relationship with the divine.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like, God, that is, if you're really there and you care about humans and you're listening to me, if you are there, this, my prayer life and that connection got really separated then. And honestly, it was only through some very non-scientific, mystical experiences that I was able to reconnect. So in that deconstruction, like, here I am, to carry for the metaphor, is like, we've stripped away all this building, standing there in this empty scaffolding, going, well, now what?
Yeah, now what?
And it was acknowledging mystical experiences that I had that allowed me to start kind of hanging stuff back on the scaffolding.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
How long do you think your deconstruction took?
Oh gosh, probably I'd say 10 to 15 years.
Okay.
Like the fuse was lit when I was a teenager, because there were already things that I was looking at that like, this can't be right. Like God's so mad at us for something that he kind of programmed us to do. And then the only way for him to get over his own anger is to embody himself as one of us and kill himself so that he's then satisfied. Like what? The fuse was already lit then. And then it just kind of continued. And like I said, by the time I got to college, I had an axe to grind. I was like, this is stupid. I'm going to find out. I'm going to expose Christianity as a hoax.
Oh, so you must have been a lot of fun when you came home from college for Thanksgiving.
That's the thing is that there's two part of it. It's that, there's theology, but then there's also the practice.
Right.
And in practice, when I would go back to visit my old church, when I go back to visit my family, a lot of the things like that actual love in practice was still happening.
Okay.
Because even like the strictest Baptists are not always sitting around the table talking about theology. I mean, sometimes they're just going like, I love you. How was your day? Pass the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's true.
And those things, those things are... I still kind of hang on to from that tradition. Like those evangelical traditions are really good at like community and even community service. So those aspects were always kind of good. But then after dinner, when you're just like, so let's talk about how many acts of grace there are, like, okay, now we're going to have a disagreement.
Oh, okay. Well, I love the fact that we are covering this, because I got to believe that there are a lot of folks out there who listen to our podcast who find us for a particular reason. We are, I like to think that we appeal to people that are out on the edges anyway, or probably are maybe even out of church and mm-hmm. asking these very questions. And it is a very lonely experience, but I can, again, only speak for my own personal. I am so grateful that I went through the deconstruction, even though the how I was provoked into it, which feels like that's the best word I can use, was a messy way to do it. I wouldn't, exactly suggest that one have to go through a life of, substance abuse and, I'm not blaming that on the trauma that I had, but it certainly contributed. And having no choice but to deconstruct, because if I hadn't done that, and where I am today, 11 plus years later, I would be a very miserable, less than person if I was even still around. I don't know if I would have what I would have done by then, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that. It was worth it. I have a wonderful, amazing life and a great relationship with the divine, as I see it and understand it, and with others, and how they see the divine or not as well, to your point, right? Because it gave me that huge space to where I don't have to live by particular rules and then have to evaluate based on those rules. I just like, okay, I'm just good with what it is that works for me. So,
yeah, from what I know of your story, what you told before, it sounded like the beliefs that you had had before that deconstruction actually kept you from being able to believe in God. If I heard you right, talked about the angry atheist period.
Yeah. 10 plus years of that. I was agnostic for a number of years, but I still believed in God. And then, in the early 2000s, when the Bush administration, and this is not about politics, but they started using gay marriage as a reason to, somebody had to be the bad guy, and we became the bad guy, right? And that's when I really got to be an angry atheist, because then the churches started going out and attacking us and making us less than, and why should we we're not entitled to the sacrament of marriage because of who we are and what God had created us, but not according to them, you know, all of that. And so I was like, well, then, you know, God is stupid. You know, this is, you know, it made no sense to me. And then I got very angry because I saw how it was used against us. And to that end, I'm currently reading a book, which, got, you know, folks, if you're interested at all from an LGBTQ point of view, the title of it's called Heavy Burdens, Seven Ways LGBTQ Christians Experience Harm in the Church, which I highly recommend. I'm about halfway through it. It's written by Bridget Eileen Rivera. She is working on her PhD at City University in New York, and she is a Christian nun. She is a lesbian herself, and it's a very practical, great book to read about actual harm done to our community. But the reason why I bring that up is she gives great history to how we, the queer community, became the anti, and it all started really within the last 100 years based on one person's use of creating the word homosexual, heterosexual, and bisexual, right? And then that only happened in the late 1800s. And I forgot who the person is. And it was in the context of psychology, it had nothing to do with religion, but mm-hmm. it actually put names to what people are, you know, from a sexual point of view. And then Freud popularized that as well. And he did say, you know, in his time that homosexuals were, you know, there was something wrong with them. They were defective because of Oedipus complex. I mean, he goes into that mm-hmm. level. If anybody's ever studied Freud, you know what I'm talking about. But then the church has picked up onto that. And she references that it was in 1949 in one of the versions of the Christian Bible. I forgot which edition. But that was the first time that the word homosexual was actually introduced yeah. into this. Like, that was the time. And I thought, wow, okay, so this is all recent, but yet look at how much harm has been done to one community. And of course, women in particular, it's been going on for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And so using the text of that. So the deconstruction process, I almost feel like if anybody has any hope of reclaiming or keeping their faith, they have to go through deconstruction. Because otherwise, people do it, but I don't know how you, I don't know how you look at your neighbor who is somebody that you then have to measure based on what your interpretation and not have some problem with that if you just take it what you heard out of pulpit or you're told that you're supposed to believe. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I see it in action. That's some of the people that I, you know, that I'm friends with, some people that I'm related to, I see them go to churches where they would be asked to hate the sin, love the sinner.
Ugh.
And yet in their day-to-day lives, they're friends with all kinds of people and give them unconditional love. And I think that sometimes people's innate sense of goodness mm-hmm. can even supersede the teaching that they're holding on to. But if pressed, they'd be like, yeah, I guess I do believe that that's not the right thing. I wish they didn't do that. But it's I have a hard time thinking about how people can just kind of like blindly, faithfully follow without questioning those things, without going like, does this really make sense? But maybe not everybody likes that. You know, it's kind of like the whole idea of, you know, everybody in America can make it if you start your own business. And not everybody wants to start their own business.
Exactly.
Some people just want to get up in the morning and go to work and come
yeah.
home.
Yeah.
Maybe some people just want to get up on Sunday morning, go to church and come home and not be theologians the rest of the time.
That's a very good point.
So
I like what you said, though, because not so long ago, a colleague and I were talking about, are people innately good? And I said, yes, you know, it's the world that corrupts us. It's our, you know, the human experience. And he's like, yeah, no, not so much. He's like, biologically and evolutionarily, that's not the case. We just happen to be the smartest, meanest monkeys in the tree. And I was like, well, okay, that's the first time I heard that. But it really made me process what his message was, you know, and I thought, well, yeah, I guess that is kind of true, because we are programmed actually not to be so nice. So we have to be taught kindness as well. With that said, for the folks that are taught kindness, and somebody like you mentioned, because I know those folks as well, they are a part of a religious community, either because of tradition or whatever keeps them there. And yet they would not have any issue, or don't have any issue with me, with my husband, or anything else like that, even though they're a part of a particular denomination that would not acknowledge Roy and me, our marriage, as the same as a heterosexual marriage. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess there is that where it does supersede. And maybe not everybody does want to deconstruct, but if somebody wanted to, well, going through faith and the what is the unplumbable depths of it, mm-hmm. I think requires deconstruction. It's just like you just have to jump in that big black hole and just see how far you're gonna go.
Yeah, I it certainly has worked for me. I don't mm-hmm. think that I could have gone any other way, or I would have been one of those people who just poked a bunch of holes in God and walked away, you know. And I've seen, I follow some folks on social media where there's a lot of kind of amateur atheists who it's like they've defined it.
I don't laugh. It's not funny, but just the amateur atheist, the phrase, the term.
Just like, yeah. I've defined God based on the theology of my childhood, and I realize that it's stupid, therefore I'm an atheist.
Well, that's kind of...
like, I get it.
Yeah, but...
But do you want to do a little more exploring? Like, scratch
just a little bit more,
a little bit?
Yeah. But you're right. You could have, and you probably... I don't know what the numbers are, because it's not like there's a study, or maybe there is, and we don't know the results, but... I'm going to say the majority of folks, that's what happens. That's why we've seen such a decline in church attendance, because people are just like, yeah, this doesn't work for me, but they don't do the deconstruction part.
Right. And one of the reasons, you know, that I've seen a number of surveys that, preachers might say people want to leave church because they want to live lives of sin and whatnot. And more often than not, young people want, love and peace and taking
yes.
care of the environment,
yes.
and they're not seeing it in the churches.
That is correct.
They're going to their churches and going like, everybody here is ready to do whatever it takes to hold on to a certain way of life, and it's kind of shady.
Absolutely.
And they're leaving because, and they're saying like, I'm finding actual love and peace and community outside
Absolutely.
Of here.
Right. And then, and if they're fulfilled, then why would they deconstruct?
Why would they?
Because there's not a need.
Right.
They're not left in some existential crisis, thinking, oh my God, you know what? And you are absolutely right. So, you know, this is definitely generational. The facts are there. And for these denominations who refuse to, I don't know how else to say it, but change or die, mm-hmm. because it's kind of what it's going to be. These, you know, it started with my generation. I'm right on the bridge of the very end of baby boomers and an early Gen Xer. And I identify as a Gen Xer much more than a baby boomer, I guess. But you, you're kind of on the cusp of the Gen Xer and a millennial. Like, you've got a lot of millennial in you. So.
Well, I think it's because I'm the dad of a 14-year-old.
So no, that's true. That's right.
You got to kind of bridge that gap.
That's true. You do.
You know, I got to keep up with all the new media and who the superstars are and the music and the
you do and to that point, that's where I was going to go with this. For your daughter, like, she is going to, she's not going to tolerate this because she's a Zoomer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Gen Zs, and they're just not having this.
No, not at all. However, it's yeah. that's the thing, is there's still a hunger for the mystical. Like, yeah. we still talk about God. We still talk about the mystery. We still talk about the universe, because I mean, the universe is weird. I mean, it
mm-hmm. and cool weird too.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
But you know, we say, you know, somebody can say, like, I just believe in science and that's all I believe in. It's like, okay, you're floating on a rock through space in an infinite space that has possibly lasted forever, infinitely backwards in time, or was created from nothing that just exploded one day and became everything. And it's one day going to, like, that's all kind of weird.
It really is.
Yeah.
And, oh, and then there's could, you know, could be very well more space than not that we are not even aware of. And I'm talking about, you know, parallel universes and other stuff like that. And, you know, of course, this is all theoretical, but, you know, to the point of the universe, that's not so theoretical. These dang telescopes, and unless they've got a really, unless all of the world governments have colluded to pull the wool over the eyes of everybody that inhabits the planet, it's like, well, this is just one big game on everybody. It's like the Truman Show, if I'm dating myself with Jim Carrey, but, you know, that was a false reality that Truman lived in. So,
I say all this it reminds me, yesterday I was in the car and I heard an interview with the musician Josh Ritter, and he was talking about his religious faith, and he was talking about growing up in Idaho, and he was talking about being, you know, being afraid of the rapture. And he said, he was like, you know, we were driving, like, we were afraid of the gods. You know, this was what our religion was like. And he kind of went on a journey like mine, as he said, I went out of my way to try to prove that it was all just hokum. And he said, and then I had an undeniable mystical experience that made me slow down. And acknowledging that mystery has made me happier and has made me a better person.
You may be on something. So I've shared on previous episodes, and you know my story pretty well by now. If anything else, I've said it enough times. But, you know, for me, not only my sobriety, but there were mystical experiences around that. And I've still had some that, you know, I don't talk a lot about, but they're very clear and clear-minded. And, you know, they're in the front of my brain. Like, you know, they're things that I don't forget. So whatever caused those, you know, whether it was the synapses of my brain firing or if it was something that was divine, I, you know, honestly, I don't care. You know, it's like, you know, it's like they happened, right? And so I call myself a mystic in that aspect. And this is almost a rhetorical question, so bear it out. But, you know, mysticism, I don't know how somebody is a mystic without doing deconstruction, because you do have to break it all down and strip away those structures and just be open, right? Mm-hmm. Because I can only speak from my experience. Again, maybe people do have mystical experiences in rigid institution or structures where they're not questioning anything else, but I can only speak for me and what you were sharing as well. Like, there are things that happen because I've the blinders are off. I'm open, I'm vulnerable, and I use the word vulnerable in a positive way because I think it's a positive, not a negative, to be vulnerable, but I'm open, I'm receiving, I'm willing to acknowledge something. And so, because of the deconstruction, I have mystical experiences and call myself a mystic.
Yeah, and I think that in Christian teaching can be aligned with the ministry of the Holy Spirit. There's that God is kind of still here and doing stuff. And if you look at, you know, there may be Christians listening to this going, no, the Bible is just exactly what it is, and you can't have any new revelation after that. If the apostles believed that way, they would have missed a lot of what the Christian story is supposed to be.
Right.
Like, when Jesus died, they thought, like, okay, we're done.
Yeah, they did, right?
We're going to go look for another Messiah. And then some women came along and were like, hey, dude, we just saw Jesus down the road. Like, if they had not been open, like, because there was no expectation within that culture that the Messiah would be resurrected. So when somebody came by, it wasn't like they were like, all right, we got to make up a resurrection story now. Like, somebody came by and was like, he resurrected. And they had to be open to, like, oh, is that what this story's about? And then after that, when they go on their story, like, the Holy Spirit shows up and they're, like, speaking other languages and there's tongues of fire and they're healing people. And, you know, people may look at this and be like, Some of that's metaphor, some of that's legend, whatever.
Whatever.
But the story is still there that like new stuff continued to happen and continued to change the direction of these early believers.
Mm.
And to me, that's an example of, that's an example for us to continue. Like, why else would you meditate and pray if it was just to say the same darn thing every day? I think that meditation and prayer is, it's a two-way street. Like, I talk to God, but like God talks to me. He might tell me something new.
I'm gonna rant here.
Sorry. Give me that look. Like,
no, I love what you say. And this is a reason why I enjoy doing this with you, because we bring our what we believe and share. And so those are all good, awesome thoughts to think. Just think through, because I meditate and do I discover new depths? Of course I do, right? Because that's the reason why I do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why?
Right. And those
never thought about it that way.
You know, and ultimately we might find out that those new depths are something within ourselves, or something within like the interconnectedness of humanity, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, it might not be exactly what one theology says it does. And I'm fine with that. I'm just saying that it's there.
Right. That's a great point. And of course, there's lots of folks that have experienced this as well. Somebody that I identify and love his works is Ken Wilber. Folks, if you're not familiar, definitely check him out. He's out there. I will say he is definitely on the edge of his faith. He's an intellectual, definitely, but also a spiritual philosopher who has done a lot of thinking and meditation about, what it is to be a person of faith. And he's written a number of books. You can find him out there. He also is part of the Integral Life and what does it mean to have an integrated life with one's faith and spirituality. The point that I'm getting with about Ken is, in particular, there's levels that we go through of development. And I feel like the deconstruction is part of that too, right? So for most people that believe in a mythical God, they're going to be, and I say this only in the context of his development scale, on what would be level 3, and that's at a lower level, to where we actually become, there is a transformation that will take place where you go from first level into second level within their stages inside of those. And second level is where you transform and you really do think in a unitative way. And I just remember, though, I was stuck at level 6, as I recall, which is the green level. And that's it's known as the mean green, where I had really no spirituality at that point, and I was trying to find the good in the world. But I really looked down on other folks as well, right? I was like, that's why it was called Mean Green, because I was very much kind of smug about it all, right? Because, well, I'm evolved and nobody else is. And I had to sit there probably for a good 2-3 years, I bet, before I finally transcended into what would be the next level, where I could feel the holistic side of things. But that was all because of the deconstruction, because otherwise I would have sat stuck. It was my own process. But to me, it's real. And to make it, that to continue that my own personal evolution and transcendence is because of my deconstruction, right? I'm always deconstructing, I guess. I don't use that word every day, but if I'm meditating and if I'm thinking and I have these conversations with you and the other work that I do, well, that's, I'm always looking for opportunity to explore beyond what, I know to be true. It was one of the very first things I wrote. I'm not sure I was even sober yet when I came to the simple conclusion that God is something that I can never understand in it, nor can any human. It is whatever we think God is not that. It is something that is incomprehensible. And that was one of the first thoughts I had. And so that's always been rolling around in me. And I guess kind of is at the basis of my deconstruction, I suppose. Like, whatever it is that is around us. In fact, You know, Kelly, I don't think I've shared this with you. I finally settled on the word that works for me for what I call God, because I don't like that word so much, is simply thing. You know, like thing as in Adam's family, right? Because I can't give it a name, and it's not describable, but it's something that's real to me. So I'll just call it thing, right? So kind of like the hand in Adam's family.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I can hear echoes of the Old Testament when Moses asked God what his name was, or was it Abraham who asked God what his name was? And God said, "I am that which I am."
Yeah.
Which could be a thing, like a thing that exists. Yeah. I exist, therefore.
Yeah. And I find a lot of comfort in that. I've tried all different types of names. I've done the G-D, that some Orthodox Jewish use as well, because the name is so holy that it cannot be spoken. Yahweh, I've tried to make my own up. And I guess maybe I'm a bit of rambling here, but in the vein of deconstruction, like, yeah, that works for me. Thing, just thing. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to understand it. And I've always known that. Like, I don't try to solve the solution because I know I can't solve it. And right. Some might well say, well, that's, I don't know what word you would use. But I was like, well, no, I cannot fathom how the universe is made.
Right. It's, that's what we were talking about that a minute ago. Like, if you go far enough out or far enough back or far enough small enough, it gets real weird.
Yeah.
There's a point where it's just like, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know yet.
So that will kind of take us into Reconstruction, but which is going to be another part we're going to talk about. You were just pulling something up on share.
Pulling up this quote from Saint Augustine.
Ooh, okay.
Which is simply, if you understood him, it would not be God.
Oh. I did not know that he said that.
So even back just in the first couple hundred years of Christianity, one of the early theologians was just saying, like, if you understand it, it is not God.
Wow. I'm not a huge fan of Augustine for a few reasons, but I'm going to like him for that one.
Yeah.
Because that's true, because I don't know how anybody could comprehend that, which when we are so finite and specific about what God is, you know, it's like, no. It's not a negative. It's just simply that I get it. As humans in this experience, we are compelled to want to solve everything. We want to know what's in that box, right? Mm-hmm. And so then we can have context. And I love context. You know, I need context in my world. I think everybody does, whether they know that or not, because it helps make good decisions, I suppose. But this is the one that just doesn't live in the box real well.
right. And it limits God to define God. And it's how, and jokingly said earlier that the amateur atheist, like, that's how you can disprove God, is by making up your own rules about God and then poking holes in them. But what if God transcends those? Then, you know, then it's harder to pin God down.
So there are, I think, four folks in current times that are the leading atheists. You know, there's Richard Dawkins, there's Sam Harris, there was Christopher Hitchens, who's no longer amongst the living, and the fourth person.
Yeah, he knows for sure now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's true. Chris does. No, but that's true. He does know. We don't know, but Chris knows.
No. I apologize.
We're all mortals. It's all good. Yeah. So, and the fourth person who completely escapes me, his name will come to me in a minute. Anyway, the point is, I look at them and I was like, yeah, I totally believe them. And, you know, Hitchens wrote the book that I have on my bookshelf, God is Not Great. And he wrote other books like that, you know, like, and Sam Harris is a little bit more friendly, but about it. But the point is that I wonder if, you know, what was their deconstruction process that got them to where they are so resolute that there is not a God and they actually have to use that as atheism, which reminds me of our awesome friend, John the Tamanil, mm-hmm. who on our first live episode back in early 2020 said something that is still resonates with me, and that is one's atheism is only as good as one's theism. So in other words, folks, if you have crappy theism, you're going to be a crappy atheist. And I love that because it's not poking at the eye out of the atheist so much as it's simply saying, you really need to deconstruct, because you maybe have picked up a lot of really crappy theism in the process, and this is why you are what you are. And that resonates with me because pretty much that's what happened to me, all right? Because all my basis of reality was on things that was I had picked up, interpreted, and therefore had used as to evaluate my own self-worth and make myself less than. When now that I'm on the other side, I was like, nah, I'm definitely not that, and I'm a divine being like everybody else is. So
right. Yeah. That's when I think about when I was raging at God and raging at Jesus, I was like, this can't be, because none of this makes sense and it doesn't work. But then I started studying the Gospels and what they said, and realized that they didn't say what I thought they did. So I was fighting against a straw man God that wasn't really the God that I then came to know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So I think it's kind of the same.
It is. It is. Wow. So we have just went down, I think, an awesome path about deconstruction. And maybe we should wrap up that part of it. And I don't know how we put a nice bow on this conversation, like a package. But for the listeners, you've heard our experiences on deconstruction. If you're somebody that's listening is like, oh, gosh, I don't know if I want to do this or not, I would say do it. It may be lonely. It may be confusing. And in fact, no, it's not. It's probably not. Let's say it'll definitely be confusing. It's going to be really frustrating. And it's going to make you question a lot of things. And yet, at the end of the day, if you follow that path and that journey and not grow weary, and just keep putting one foot in the front of the other in this exploration, you'll find that there is a huge reward out of that in the form of peace. I don't think you're going to find the answer. At least I certainly haven't found the answer, but how I feel and how I look at the life around me in this experience, I'm profoundly grateful that I had to go through a journey of deconstruction.
Yeah, and I think the truth can take it. Like we,
yes,
you know that
that's true too.
We, if what we hold true can't hold up to any kind of scrutiny, is it a truth worth holding on to?
Mm.
Or, I think we got to dig to the bottom of it. And, I do think that there's a place to land at the other end for somebody who's really into seeking the truth. And the way that I think about it is that it's an ongoing process. I kind of have two rules that I live by. One is do the best I can with what I know at the time and continue to keep an open mind to what's new. So between those two, then it just kind of, when you know better, do better.
Nice. Well, so folks, as we wrap this up, I will say, there is the saying that I do love, and it's the truth shall set you free. So.
Amen.
Amen. All right. So let's call this a wrap on this particular episode of Deconstruction. The next one we are going to pick up on will be Reconstruction. And what does that mean? So, Kelly, sounds like a great opportunity. So I say thanks to our listeners again for listening in on us.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Mark. This was an awesome conversation.
Likewise, it was, Kelly. Thanks again, everybody. And go check us out. And if you want to see any of our podcasts, they can be found on all of the major podcast platforms. And go back and listen to some of our older ones. If you want to know what's going on, you can go see with Kelly in particular. Go see his things at, what's your web address again?
KellyWilson.com.
Oh, that's pretty easy.
Yeah. And yours, Mark?
Is MarkDilcom.com. So you can check out what we're doing. So thanks for listening to us, and we'll catch you on in the next episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to radicallovelive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at kellywilson.com and Mark at markdilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.